You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to another Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Cott and I'm delighted to be joined by Record Sports' Graham Young and making his Celtic pod debut, Will Lancaster. Guys, how are you?
I'm not too bad, mate. Thank you. How are you?
I'm very good, Will. It's good to have you on board. Graham, how are you keeping? I know you've been under the weather.
Hey, I've come off the injury bench here. We're okay. We're ready to go. We never stop on the Celtic podcast, as you know, Dan. So let's go for it.
Exactly. Well said. And the best place to start, I suppose, has to be obviously Celtic's defeat at home to RB Leipzig earlier this week in the Champions League. Obviously, a result that means that they can't now qualify for the last 16. Well, I'll maybe start with yourself. On the game itself, I thought, again, really frustrating because Celtic played so well in such periods, created brilliant chances, and really should have been at least 2-0 up before Leipzig scored.
Yeah, it's just a bit frustrating, really. Obviously, the first half against Real Madrid on game week one kind of opened your eyes as to what Celtic can do. The difference in quality between Real Madrid and Leipzig is vast, obviously. And a 3-0 scoreline, even though it flattered them, probably was the correct result. But you look back to the game against Shakhtar Donetsk and all those missed chances show that Celtic can get in the right areas. But then again, like we had on Tuesday night, it's just that, not wastefulness as such, but lack of inexperience. Like Kyogo still hasn't scored in the Champions League yet. And then you look at the other end of the pitch, you've got Timo Werner, who's a top quality striker, Christopher Nkunku, who's got like plaudits across Europe. And even Forsberg's goal was really well taken. And it's just those little differences in the final third that I think Celtic will be ruined up for this Champions League campaign, at least. Next year, obviously, it's not guaranteed that they get there, but if they do, so I think that's a key area that Ange Postecoglou really has to pick up on if they are to progress.
I definitely think there's going to be plenty for us to kind of wallow about, you know, with Celtic being out. It's not been a great week in general for Scottish football in Europe, but maybe we should look at the positives, Graham. I mean, on the night, I thought a lot of Celtic's team played really well. I thought Hart had a really good game. I thought Jens at the back was like a big Rolls Royce. It was absolutely brilliant, alongside Carter Vickers, Taylor as well. But I wanted to point out Matt O'Reilly, because I know he gets lots of praise since he's moved to Celtic, and rightfully so. But moving into that Callum McGregor role, I thought he was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair assessment of how the game panned out for Celtic. I think you've gone through some of the best performers. I think Carter Vickers, I'll go back to Riley in a minute, but just a special mention for Carter Vickers. I know Jens next to him was very good, but if you were there on a scout mission for a top team across, you would, I don't think it'd need to be a very long report. It would just maybe say sign him on it, because he just looked incredible, I think, at that level. And we all know he's not the tallest, but he was just dominant physically. And I think when you look at teams like Tottenham, you wonder how he gets away with a team like Tottenham playing like that, because it was just such an imposing performance. Like, again, I thought O'Reilly getting asked to do a lot of things. Actually, when you're there in person, you see a lot of extra little bits, and O'Reilly out with his obvious ability, he was very demanding, asking for more, making sure Hatate was cutting inside or covering him. There was a lot of accountability, I felt, for O'Reilly in the night, both in the way he played and what he was asking his teammates. I think Will summed it up masterfully there, where he, about the players, it's the difference at the top level. And I don't think Celtic fans want to hear that too much, because this isn't a Celtic team in the Champions League who have been competing on and off. It's been a nightmare for a long time at this level, since the Neil Lennon team that made the last 16. But you talk about 7 home defeats in a row, all types of defeats. And because there's a certain generation of Celtic fan who knows what it's like to beat big teams, beating teams like Porto, Benfica, Manchester United, AC Milan, Lyon, like signature wins at this tournament and this level, it becomes quite difficult. Now, obviously, the disparity in cash is evident, but that's maybe the, as much as everyone can see what's there for everyone to see. They're competing, they're getting shots off. There is this sense of it didn't used to be like this. And I think that's probably the hardest element for Celtic supporters to maybe deal with at this present time.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good point. And you're right about Carl Vickers as well. He was absolutely outstanding. And I think Celtic have really missed him recently. You know, I think it really showed when he came back in. No harm to Stephen Welsh, who's still a young player, still got a wee bit of developing to do. But Carl Vickers not being in the team, just huge.
Yeah, and I think you nailed it there. I think a lot of people were expecting Welsh to start with Carter Vickers. Maybe not everybody, but Jens has probably been getting a bit tight recently. I've been impressed with him as well. I think obviously a couple of slack passes, but I did note something Postecoglou said. I was talking about the Hart goal in Leipzig where he was saying, oh, I don't mind players along the lines of they're trying to make the forward pass. And at least I felt Jens was doing that maybe more naturally than Welsh. But it is what it is. That's where Celtic are. There's loads of things you probably like about them. What Forsberg was saying about Celtic, the quotes, it's very much pat in the back, but it's the truth. They move the ball quickly. They don't play like a Scottish team. They're trying to do things. It's high. It's like high wire act, isn't it? Like they're trying to play like they've got £30 million players all over the pitch. And ultimately, does that work eventually? Because do you keep developing your squad? That's what needs to happen. That's what these teams like Bruges, and now everyone's using Bruges as an example, but Bruges have been qualifying for the Champions League for nearly every single season for a decent amount of time, and that's like a Porto or a good Ajax team. That's how you do it. You just, if you end up losing a Jota, Carter Vickers, the next two signings need to be even better. I know it's hard to do, but that's the template or the blueprint for these teams. I'll call it the green print, but it's That's how you need to do it. That's how you do it. You establish yourself at a certain level, and then the next batch gets even better, or your scouting's even sharper the next time. You find a better bargain, or however it works, and you keep going. But that all rests on Postecoglou being there a long time, which I think Celtic fans would like. But again, football's not like that, and other teams want teams that play a certain way. And out with the results, I still think Postecoglou's star isn't dimmed any by the fact teams that like the way he plays football, and who knows next 4 or 5 years how it all pans out. But I can understand the initial frustration, but most of the stuff that's been good about Celtic was still there the other night.
Right, no, definitely. Well, one player in the team who I feel a bit sorry for almost, because I feel like he's becoming a little bit of a whipping boy, albeit I'm only going really by like social media and, you know, WhatsApp and what have you, but Dyson Maeder, he seems to, I feel like every game now, he's getting a lot of stick. And I get if he could finish, he wouldn't be playing for Celtic. That's the truth. But I just think the work rate he brings, his pace, the way he drags defenders about, I think he's still a quality player.
Yeah, it's a tough one, really, because he came in, like, fired away on his loan spell. The obligation spy happened, and he's just not really hit the heights that he had last year. But If Ange's to pick a team based on form, obviously Jota was injured, but you've got Haksabanovic, Abada, even Forrest that can all fill in. And it does feel like Maeder's been, like I said before, a bit in terms of being wasteful in front of goal. He's like the epitome of that. His work rate obviously second to none, but if you're not performing this team, there's enough people to be waiting in the wings to come in and take your spot. It's a hungry young team. It's in a revitalization process. So you've got players chomping at the bit, and unfortunately for me, Maeder's not really fulfilling that. But that's not to say that he shouldn't be picked. He's obviously low on confidence. But like I say, in a team where there's so many players that can fill his role, if you're not doing well, you're not doing well. Then it could be back to the drawing board for him. I do like him, but it is what it is. Like Graham says,
No, sorry, Will. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I was just asking Graham what his thoughts were on Maeder.
Yeah, pretty similar. I feel you see it much in the first half, where he's all about the press, isn't it? When they're in position, he does it as well as anyone. He understands exactly what Postecoglou wants. But at the same time, it was a cross in the second half. If there was a bubbling frustration for a couple of weeks. It all came out in the second half down the left wing when he contrived to just a really bad cross. And I think that's the worry, because Postecoglou, again, something he noticed is the fact he is getting into these positions to score. And probably some of the best chances in the whole tournament for Celtic, quite a lot, but the best ones have probably landed at the wrong person. But then you say, who's the right person? Because no one's scoring. I just feel my one takeaway for the first four games is maybe Giakoumakis potentially should have been. Well, I know he started against Real Madrid, but it just, and I know he misses chances as well, but there's just, to me, he's the type of player who takes some of these ones that have gone to other players. And he's not a perfect player either. He's got loads and loads of ability in what he does. This is going to be the argument that's going to keep coming. Kyogo's a top player, but I just think Giakoumakis sometimes just brings an added element. And I know I've moved on from Maeda very quickly there, but I think you can see, back to Maeda, the problem is it's not technique, is it, so much? Well, it is potentially. The ball sometimes runs away from him. Sometimes in games like this, when the margins are so fine, Maeda sometimes coughs the ball up quite quickly, or, like you say, miss a chance that kind of takes the pop out of the atmosphere. And I think, like anybody, you always need someone to vent your frustrations, and right now it's Maeda. Like, it's just, it is the way it is, but the qualities are obvious of what he has. He's one of the most defensively sound forwards you'll find, which might sound like a bit of counting truth statement, but that's the way it is. And he also has, I think the other thing I've mentioned a couple articles about Maeda is the fact, for someone, I think you were expecting this like kind of jet-heeled superstar. And I know he's quick to close people down, but sometimes in 1v1s, he's not the best at actually getting round anyone, or there's maybe not a flick or a trick. I know he likes a wee flicked finish, but out wide, where he plays most of his football, he doesn't do that. So again, I think it's probably a building frustration over the four games that all kind of came out in that incident in the second half where he nearly cleared the stadium with his cross. So it is. But again, like anybody, it's football, isn't it? If he scores a hat-trick in Shakhtar and they somehow get a result in Madrid and go through, then all will be forgotten. But that's just the way of the world, isn't it, with football fans?
That's it. And you mentioned there James Forrest. I thought special mention to him because, again, one that's maybe kind of been out the picture a little bit. I know Ange was asked about him before kickoff, that it was 450th appearance, and, you know, what does he still bring to the team? And the manager quite rightly said, you know, he's been and done it in the biggest games. And when he came on, I thought it was really noticeable how, just a really simple James Forrest style, he created a lot of chances and looked pretty dangerous and played really well.
Yeah, he's one of those traditional wingers that you don't really see anymore. Everyone tends to be inverted. So you've got Jota and Abada on one wing. And it is refreshing to see someone just pick up the ball and run at a defender, because you don't really get that anymore. Going back to Maeda, I hate to, obviously, I'm becoming a bit of a person who's making him a whipping boy, but if you look at the options you've got out wide, they're all really technical players, including Haksabanovic. You've got four really out-and-out wingers or inverted wingers there that can come on and change a game, and Maeda doesn't do that. So I think that's why Forrest's inclusion was a bit, you know, it was lauded by Celtic fans, because it was just sort of back to the old style. Creating chances. I know he wasn't on for long, but it offered that glimpse of hope when everything had gone a bit stale out wide. And like you say, 450 appearances is in vital experience. Like, you know, I can't really think of many other players who have racked that up in the current team or any decades gone by. His know-how does sort of, you know, offer a glimpse into the past of even the Brendan era, the Lennon era, the Dyler era. That experience that one player can have that Celtic fans can ring the name out of really can do something on the night. It's just unfortunate that it wasn't against Leipzig.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, you touched on it a couple of minutes ago, Graham. We've talked about the game itself, but overall, what is needed for Celtic to compete at this level? Is it even a realistic target to be competitive in Champions League football? Because I'll tell you what, where I come from, going into the game the other night, you looked at it and say you beat Leipzig at home and you beat Shakhtar at home and you're in the last 16. Now, to me, on one hand, I think the Champions League level might be beyond Celtic, but on the other hand, that's a task that Celtic should really be up to, I think.
Yeah, also the factor in there that it was dependent on Real Madrid winning two games, which
of course,
that's the way you would say. Of course, it is. That's the way you think. The interesting thing as well is I think it's perception in this group as well. If Celtic had beat Shakhtar like they should have, they'd have 3 points. Shakhtar have been able to get this. If you watch both games, like that remarkable kind of smash and grab win against Leipzig in match day one, and then they back it up with results. You can't underplay Shakhtar's ability, but I think Celtic, you could see in Warsaw, matched up pretty well with them. And Celtic's constant pass and press tired them out, moved them about like, as if they were playing, as if Shakhtar were playing one of the very top teams, and that's the difference with Postecoglou. Whatever, in the final kind of post-mortem of this group, Celtic played Shakhtar in a way they've never played another team in Europe at Champions League level, like totally, unless they've been down to 10 men, or like just total dominance away from home. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is different. Celtic, this Celtic team isn't like, and I'm not going to, I think Brendan Rodgers having a hard enough time, but Rodgers was an idealist, but he was never as fully committed to such a style. He was pretty, everyone goes on about Brendan Rodgers now in Europe. He played a 5 at the back against Barcelona in the game that was 7-1, or was it 7-0, 7-1, completely changed the way he played to suit. So Postecoglou doesn't do that, and I think there's been a lot of benefits to that. It's not all been perfect at times. You've got to get like the Leipzig second half, so you need to ask yourself, Celtic, it's not a dead rubber, is it? If they win against Shakhtar next week, they've got a chance to go in the final game. Who knows, maybe it is, because Real Madrid of the group wrapped up, they'll be just about in World Cup mode, so it's about this game. But again, I think a lot of the final kind of observations will be on this game. Can Celtic put everything together that's shown so far with the goals? Because, and again, Shakhtar, even though they were poor in Warsaw, proved capable of being very effective in the counter-attack. That's a couple of really signature results for them in the group so far. They've only lost one of their 4 group games, so it just kind of puts it into perspective. So they're no gimme either, but it feels that is it. Celtic aren't going to, without a transfer window, without maybe bigger player, it sounds like Gordon Strachan stuff here, but as good as Celtic are, they're just maybe one or two players of just physicality, as much as they want to play a brand of football. I'm not talking about long ball style, but just some of the players that they've come up against in other teams in this tournament. And I know you could point to Modric and Kroos and all these guys as well, but these are elite, elite players. But I think maybe the next 2 transfer windows, just a couple of players that are just a bit bigger, a bit more robust. Like Jens probably, and Abigard, if he comes up to the stand, like he's a bigger player. Not every player needs to be a giant, but it just seems like maybe as good as the fullbacks have been, maybe something there, or a slightly different shape. But again, I think if Celtic, perception will be based on if Celtic beat Shakhtar and come up with a stirring performance in the Bernabeu, it'd be a pretty decent finish to a first campaign after 5 years away. But again, that, as we've said, it's no gimme, but that's what they need to do next.
Right. And Shakhtar again, great, like you were saying, of Club Brugge, Shakhtar's another team like that. Like every time, you know, they're in it every year. They played Real Madrid, I think, in three of the last 5 group stages. So,
yeah,
you know, people thinking that they would just roll over. I know I expected Real Madrid to beat them, but, you know, as you say, they're no gimme. I agree with everything you just said, Graham. Basically, I don't see how you could disagree. But see, on the other hand, well, right, I feel like a lot of Celtic fans are maybe getting a little bit disgruntled at being viewed, and I put it, for want of a better phrase, like a Disneyland club, in the sense that, you know, players arrive at Celtic Park and they rave about the atmosphere, oh wow, but then it's like they give Celtic a pat on the head and then take the 3 points up the road. I mean, for Celtic to, they've not won a group game at home since 2013. There's only been 2 wins at home in the group stages since Tony Watt scored against Barcelona 11 years ago. I mean, 10 years ago? Like 10 years ago, sorry. I mean, that's, for a club of Celtic size, that just can't be good enough. I don't know. I feel like Celtic deserve more. They're a bigger club than that.
Yeah, it's not ideal at all. You've kind of got to remember it's a work in progress. You see, like last year, getting knocked out by Bodø/Glimt in the Conference League, losing to Betis and Leverkusen, who admittedly Leverkusen are in the Champions League this year, but it was comprehensive 4-0 at Celtic Park. Fans are thinking, like, what on earth is going on, given how the Brendan Rodgers era went with a few scalps, a few draws in the Champions League. But I completely agree with your point. It's I mean, the Real Madrid loss is a bit of an anomaly, but to lose 2-0 to Leipzig, especially after beating them in the Europa League a few years ago, and Rangers, well, you say unfortunately on this podcast, doing them in the semi-final, and it's disappointing. But again, like Graham said before, the funding, the TV broadcast, and all that sort of stuff, it does set up this disparity. And I know there's disgruntlement around the club, but you kind of not have to accept it, but understand the fundamentals of it before you can start to progress. And unfortunately, modern football has sort of left Celtic behind in that regard, to the point where any sort of scalp against the big team is treated like, you know, like a real big occasion. The Tony Watt one, like you say, one of Celtic's best days this side of the century, alongside the UEFA Cup run in 2003. And it's almost disheartening to see that fans are clinging on to those moments, because they're no longer able to compete against teams like Leipzig and Shakhtar Donetsk and stuff like that. So I think, yeah, people do view it as a Disneyland club, and it does need to change, but there also needs to be a sense of like realism, and that Andy's only just getting going in his tenure. Give it a bit of time and see what happens, because frankly speaking, the players are quite new to the system. Even though it's been a year, they're not fully gelled yet. So I think give it 2 or 3 more years of continuing the process, slowly building, and then that myth might be dispelled. You know?
Yeah, do you get what I mean about the Disneyland thing? Like the almost like it just feels a bit patronising at times.
100%. Honestly, it's Marco Rose's comments about, oh, you have a cracking time at Celtic Park.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, I know.
You get to go about in a scarf. And you can understand, because this is Celtic fans trying to find the reason why, because it's results based. But for say anyone 30 plus, they know all about big games and big wins. That's just what happened. So Martin O'Neill came into Celtic. Celtic were just completely in crisis of confidence with Rangers. Quickly turned that round. And Celtic hadn't been a European team since probably 1980 against Real Madrid. There's little moments in between, but suddenly Celtic every season were winning games in Europe. And it lasted pretty much for 12 years. There was a couple of dud seasons in there. And since then, you're left with the atmosphere. You're left with a noise. The fans are still there, but they're not matched by the players on the pitch. And I felt there was a genuine angst inside the stadium. Again, moments like Maeda, just this. Never as Celtic misses normally, you get the big a pause. Oh, well, you've missed a chance. Let's keep going. I felt I fear that this might not go to plan, because it hasn't gone to plan for a long time. But again, to stick up for Ange Postecoglou, there is a genuine, you're nothing without a process or an ideal, and sometimes people argue he's too rigid to the way he plays. But for Celtic, they've actually needed this, because for a long time, in some of their worst European campaigns, and there's been plenty in recent years, there's been no genuine plan. And I believe, because he's got such a good eye for a player, that the Celtic do back him, and they have another couple of really strong transfers. There's no reason this Rodgers' best season was his first season. I don't think that necessarily needs to be the case with Postecoglou. I think his best season could be this year, if things, again, if you finish fourth, it probably ends in terms of Europe that way, but maybe you go again next year. But I totally understand this idea that it's very is Instagrammable, would that be right? That the disco lights, you can understand vloggers, people, and that's, listen, in the day, it's a compliment in a way that people want to come and experience a kind of a big atmosphere, a big stadium. It's marketed well, people know it's a good place to, or a good place to experience. But I think actually now, just to make a final point, as much as all that's true, I think it is high time that the team in the pits, the supporters deserve a result back, if that makes sense as well. I think it's a bit of both. So, and I don't think even a slightly reduced atmosphere, if Celtic are on it against the right team, it all comes down to the Shakhtar game. Celtic aren't going to make the last 16 this season. And probably, as much as they've looked like a route up until match day 4, they're probably not ready, they're definitely not ready to anyway. So they beat Shakhtar and go for it in the Bernabeu. I think it's not quite Anil's first season of beating Juventus 9 points, not making it out, but it'd be a pretty decent fist of their first game back, and still an outside chance Europa League, where some of the Postecoglou methods probably this with the team improved the last season would fare well, and there could be one or two scalps there. But again, they need four results to go their way in the last two game in the last two match days. So it might be a case like the Rangers that it's building, it's domestic, go for the title and then go again next season.
Yeah, no, I think you summed it up perfectly there. I think I think the Shakhtar game is still crucial, even though they can't progress. But as you say, I think the fans definitely deserve a performance and 3 points. I was going to finish this podcast off, guys, by saying, obviously, Celtic are playing Hibs at the weekend. Well, I was going to ask, would you make many changes? The only one that I could see is Abelgaard maybe getting a run out at some point. But given McGregor's still out, Starfelt's still out, Jota probably touch and go still, and obviously Abada come off injured the other night, there's not really much wiggle room for Postecoglou to change it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if he's going to make any changes, you maybe look at those who underperformed in midweek. So Kyogo could make way for Jack Marcus. Abelgaard obviously deserves a chance in that McGregor role. Yeah, Taylor, like you say, the centre-half's played really well. Juranovic and Ralston, that could be somewhere perhaps just to rest him. But in general, it's as you were, really. It wasn't a bad performance overall. I know that we've been slating it for the last half an hour or so, but it's just a difference in quality. And if you look at Celtic compared to Hibs this season, you'd hope that they should be on the other foot this weekend.
And Graham, Abelgaard, the only one you could really see maybe getting a look at the weekend?
Yeah, and I know every game's must win because it's Celtic, but I'd maybe Hatate's good. And I'm a massive Hatate fan. I think he's been unbelievable. But just the type of game he does play sometimes in these league games where it's all the touch passing, not just great. But I think it's probably a good game to rest him and a good. I think it needs to be a kind of direct performance by Celtic, which Abelgaard, I think it needs to be, because as much as I think we know what Moy can do and different players, but I think that would make sense in the midfield. I think James Forrest might start actually. I think he's been, and obviously, even if Abada's dead leg isn't not a big injury anyway, and then you've got again what you say, Jack. I think Jack Amakis again scored against St Johnson, probably not his best game, but Kyogo's, he's maybe, I think we can all see it that he's not playing terribly, but it's just not the same level that you'd maybe hope at these games. So I think those are the changes that make sense. Ralston for Juranovic, don't like kind of Juranovic, an important player, but Ralston's is probably as good a backup as you'll find about. Just fits the system, knows what he's doing, and he's actually really dangerous going forward. So and maybe like three or four changes for obvious reasons, and then it's go time again, isn't it? But again, that might come in the Premier Sports Cup game against Motherwell, so it's non-stop until the World Cup, so it might be two changes here, two changes there, or the game's coming up, just while you try and keep a run of form going.
Right, absolutely. I should say to everyone listening that you can get involved in the discussion. We are obviously on Twitter @DR_Celtic, @RecordSport, and we're also on Instagram @DailyRecord_Sport. Graham, it's always a pleasure, and Will, nice solid debut for you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, guys. And thanks for everyone listening, and we'll be back next week. Cheers.